In this part of the show, we have a healthcare topic for you, something that we do every year on the program. Throughout the year, we do many shows on health, and we try to create opportunities for you to call in and ask questions on general sorts of topics. And then occasionally, there are a few things that we pick to try to concentrate on. And today, one of them, we'll talk about the back and care of the back. Back problems, we're told, are the most common physical complaint among American adults. Non-specific back pain is a leading cause of lost job time, and also, I'm sure, one of the reasons that people go out and buy over-the-counter pain relievers. But if you take care of your back, it is possible for it to serve you well. So we'll be talking a little bit about the common problems of the back, and if you have questions, please do take the opportunity to call. Our guest is Dr. James Harms. He's an orthopedic surgeon from Carl Clinic and has been with us before quite a few times to do this program, and he's generous enough to come back every year. Generally, we do these in the summer, and to talk with us. So your questions are welcome. The only thing we caution is on these healthcare programs is that we can't diagnose over the phone. So there's a limit to what we can do, but we do the shows to try to add to your store of knowledge. And if we can help you out, we certainly will try. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILO or 9455. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-WILO. At any point here, if you have questions, you can call us. Well, thank you once again for being here.
Good morning, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Maybe the way to begin, I kind of think we maybe always do this, is for me to ask you just to talk a little bit about the spine and the structure of the spine, because I think then understanding that then helps to understand where the problems come when people do have problems. How is it put together?
The spine, of course, is the backbone, pun intended, of the human body that keeps the head upright so it can see and do those things. It supports the arms so that one can manipulate one's environment, and it is the connection to the legs so that a person can get from one place to another. Without a functioning spine, it would be very difficult to do any of those things. One has to have strength, and that's what the bones are for. The bones, of course, are the building blocks of the spine. Between the bones, one has discs, which are shock absorbers that allow motion and yet allows the bones to continue functioning without having to absorb all the load. The joints also include facet joints in the back of the spine that further stabilize the spine and allow for motion. There are ligaments, which are the supporting structures that keep the spine from falling apart or moving too much in one direction or another. They are a check rein on the spine. And, of course, you have the muscles, which are the motor power that moves the spine and supports the spine within its possible range of motion. One has to do things to keep each of those in good shape during one's life, and exercise is particularly important. Not only does one need to keep one's weight within 20% of ideal, one needs to have exercise, one needs to take in the right amount of calcium and vitamin D. There are many things that need to be done for one's back health. Some of those things we do automatically each day. Some of those things, as we get older, we have to pay a little more attention to.
Is the main cause of back problems, does it ultimately get to the disc, that shock absorber thing that's in between the individual segments of the spine?
That question has many different answers. You can look at the cause in terms of the primary reason, and some people say it's because human beings walk upright. In many cases, I tell people, well, you probably inherited a tendency to get a bad back from your parents. We know genetics plays a big role in it. We certainly think that the disc is one of the major sources of pain within the spine. We know that the discs age as one gets older, and in many cases, that aging can be accompanied by episodic pain. We know that would be called degenerative disc disease or symptomatic premature degenerative disc disease. We know that the discs can also cause problems with herniation. A person can get a crack in the disc, and some of the soft center nuclear material that has the consistency of crab meat can come out and rub on a nerve. One could get leg pain or arm pain under those circumstances. If the disc is not taking up its normal two-thirds of the load because it is aging prematurely, that also puts more force on the facet joints in the back of the spine and can cause them to age prematurely and get arthritis, which would be soreness and stiffness in one position for a long time type of symptoms. Mm-hmm. So yes, the disc is a major contributing factor, but occasionally the muscles, the ligaments, the other joints, or the bones themselves can cause pain or be a pain generator.
Yeah. I think sometimes when people complain of back trouble, maybe if you ask them, well, where exactly does it hurt, they'll say, well, in my back. And they may not be able to, then if you say, well, all right, point to the place for me, it may be difficult for them. Is it sometimes indeed the pain is generalized and you and the patient would not be able to say, okay, doc, right here where I'm pointing, this is the place?
Yes. We know that in the old days we had a very hard time localizing the site of the origin of the pain. We're a little bit better at it nowadays with MRIs, CAT scans, etc. But a person does not necessarily feel the pain in the area where the pain is generated. The current theory is that as a disc ages, and we're talking about discogenic pain now, that the disc forms certain chemicals in the center. If those chemicals leak out into the spinal canal through microscopic holes, those chemicals can go into the nerves and cause the nerves to be inflamed. Think of it as being red and swollen. If this material, these chemicals, go into the small nerves that go to the muscles of the back, you feel it where those muscles are, which is not necessarily in the same place that the pain is being generated. Mm. If you get enough of these chemicals, they can even go into the larger nerves that come out the back and go down the leg, and one can get leg symptoms even in the absence of pressure on the nerves. I need to caution our audience that this is a theory, and 10 years ago I could not have told you this. 10 years into the future, I'm sure the theory will be much more refined. But it certainly explains a lot of what goes on in the back.
We're talking this morning about the back and back care. And if you have back-related questions, you should pick up the telephone and give us a call. Our guest, Dr. James Harms, is an orthopedic surgeon from Carl Clinic here in Champaign-Urbana. The number to call, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. You know, in the past, we have talked a little bit about the risk factors for back trouble. And one of the things that we have mentioned, and it's, I think some people might be a little bit surprised, is that if you're a smoker, heavy smoking is one of those risk factors. And I think that in the past, when we asked the question, why, well, we really weren't quite so sure. Do we actually maybe have a little bit better answer now as to why it is that nicotine should particularly be a problem for the back?
There's a lot of research going on, both in animals and in humans, to answer that question. Originally, it was thought that the coughing associated with cigarette smoking or lung problems of any sort caused force to be transmitted through particularly the veins, shock waves during the cough, and hence the back saw an increased amount of stress. The discs saw more force, had to absorb more energy than in the average person. That was thought to be the problem. The next theory was that one of the poisons in the cigarettes that was absorbed into the body caused the enzymes in the disc that were needed to maintain the water content of the disc were somehow interfered with. The most recent theory was that just as cigarette smoking affects the small arteries that go to the heart and you get heart disease, just as cigarette smoking causes peripheral vascular problems in the legs, difficulty walking, that the same is true for the small arteries that go to the spine. The discs do not have much in the way of direct circulation, so the discs might be quite sensitive to any minor changes in circulation. In terms of the nicotine, some of the current research has to do with the effects of nicotine at the cellular level. And it has currently been shown that the nicotine can affect the genes and can, in fact, turn off one of the genes that's responsible for making bone. We've known for some time that spinal fusions work a certain percentage of the time. Say if I'm doing a routine lumbar spinal fusion on someone, they might heal 80% of the time. if they're a cigarette smoker, they would heal only half as often. And we're beginning to learn the mechanism of that, in that cigarette smoking turns off one of the genes within the cells that make bone and tells the cells not to make as much bone.
So smoking, that's obviously a risk factor. We may not know precisely the mechanism, but we know that that's problematic. One thing that also we touched on was weight. And being overweight, that can also be a risk factor. And the strength of the muscles, both in your back and your abdomen, that's if they're weak, they don't support the spinal column well, that also is a problem.
Both of those probably have to do with the amount of force that the spine sees. If you're more than 20% over ideal weight, there is a higher association with back problems. And presumably that's on the basis of the day in and day out forces that the discs and joints are subjected to. On the matter of exercise and strong muscles, we think that if the abdominal and back muscles are strong, they will absorb more of the force and less of the energy will be transmitted down to the sensitive discs or joints. So it's thought to be a protective value to keep your weight within 20% of ideal and exercise regularly. Now, that would be some gentle stretching exercises because we think that flexibility helps. That would include something for one's cardiovascular fitness because we know that people that get general exercise on a regular basis tend to have less back problems. It would also include the abdominal and back muscles, as we've already discussed.
Okay, so we're saying to people, if you're interested in trying to keep your back healthy, we'd say don't smoke, and we would say that it'd be a good thing to stay close to what should be the ideal weight for your height, and also we're saying some regular exercise is good. What else?
Psychosocial factors seem to play an unusual role in back problems. For example, there are a number of studies that have been done that show that if you're happy with your job, if you have a good way of handling stress in your life, if you've got healthy relationships, for example, a marriage, then you're much less likely to have incapacitating back problems. That's independent of other factors, such as cigarette smoking, whether your parents had back problems, your weight. It's independent of that. So we know that psychosocial factors are something that we need to pay more attention to.
So is that... then we're talking about real pain, or is – I guess I'm sort of interested in this idea. Well, what exactly is going on here? Is it just that if you're highly stressed and that somehow you're experiencing tension there or what? I mean, why should that be a problem that it would particularly affect the back as opposed to anything else?
There are a number of theories to explain that. The tension theory is one which is accepted by some. That is, if I'm under a lot of stress, I may tense up my neck muscles or my low back muscles in response. That's what most tension headaches are, is tensing of the neck muscles. If you tense your muscles, then your spine moves less and the spine sees more forces, as we talked about earlier. So that could be one of the mechanisms. It could irritate an underlying, otherwise minor problem. We do know that there are certain chemicals in the brain, endorphins, that have to do with pain relief, and that when you're under certain kinds of stresses, you may not produce as much in the way of endorphins, or there may be something that blocks their expression. There was a recent article in a journal that I read, it may even been a lay magazine, that talked about studies going on now with certain kinds of PET scanners where they actually look at the chemicals and the transmitters, the neurotransmitters in the brain. And it seems that people are put together differently and that you or I, over a period of time in a stressful job, may even have our brain chemistry change some so that we appreciate pain, we feel pain in a real way, proven objectively, compared to somebody in a less stressful job or somebody who handles stress better. So it's very complicated, but no, those people do have real pain. They feel it. There will be or are ways of measuring that.
Yeah. There, I know that a lot of people these days are interested in various kinds of supplements, things that are available over-the-counter without prescription that they feel may help with certain complaints. And there are some that some people who have joint discomfort, say they think helps them. Have any of these things been shown to be useful with people who have complaints of back pain?
One would think that the chondroitin sulfate or the glucosamine that has been used successfully in some of the larger joints, particularly knees, might be of benefit. So far, there's not been any evidence that backs are helped that much by either of those two substances. Mm-hmm. Certainly, there are things such as capsaicin, which is a pepper plant derivative, that can help temporarily with a person's pain. Any of the concoctions that include menthol or aspirin that's placed on the skin can be of short-term benefit, not as long-term benefit as if, for example, an anti-inflammatory and arthritis drug such as aspirin is taken internally. But those can help a little bit temporarily. For the back, supplements generally do not have a lot of beneficial long-term effect.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, and I'm very curious about why it is that something that you would apply to the skin would have some sort of effect on how you would perceive pain that was clearly down deep below the level of the skin. Is that actually a matter of your sort of fooling the body, or does it actually have a therapeutic effect?
And I would say, are those two things really different? Nobody is sure.
Good point.
Nobody is sure, but there is a theory to explain it. It's called the gate theory of pain. There are signals that come from your body that go to your spinal cord. The spinal cord integrates those signals, sends it to the brain. The brain integrates it with other signals and then interprets it, and you get a feeling of an itch, a scratch, a pain, or it never reaches your level of consciousness or awareness. You can send good signals that can overcome bad signals, or you can send a worse signal that will overcome a minor irritant signal. For example, if you have an itch in your palm and I hit your small toe with a hammer, you will no longer feel the itch. If you have a mild headache and all of a sudden you win the lottery, and you are now $10 million richer, I have a suspicion that your headache would go away. It's the same thing with the spine and with other joints. We think that they're negative signals coming from the joints going to the spinal cord. If you can send other very, very minor negative signals or some positive signals through other nerves that are integrated in the spinal cord before it goes up to the brain, one can overcome those signals. So there is a theory to explain how these skin preparations work.
Mm. And the capsaicin, this is the stuff that it makes hot peppers hot.
Yes, sir.
Right. And it is applied as a topical
cream. Yes, sir.
Yeah. And that might be something that people could always try. See if it does anything.
Long as they wash their hands very carefully and
don't rub your eyes. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Well, our guest this morning is Dr. Jim Harms. He's an orthopedic surgeon from Carl Clinic, and we're talking about the back. And so if you have back questions, you can call us 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana, folks. And we do also have a toll-free line. So that means if it would be a long-distance call for you, you can use that number, 800-222-9455. Here's a caller. We're starting to get some folks lined up. First caller is in Shumway, and this would be on our line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question for the our guest today. Mm-hmm. About the vertebrae. Is there certain areas of the back that may affect the legs and maybe a different set that affects the arms and et cetera?
Yes, that is quite common. And nerve signals, for example, go downhill. So you can have a low back problem, say just above or below the waist, and that would classically, if it's causing pressure on the nerves, produce leg symptoms. If you had a problem in the neck where the nerves come out and go down the arms, that would classically cause arm symptoms. If you have a massive problem in the neck, you could not only get the nerves going out to the arms, but you could get the legs as well. Also, there's the middle area of the spine called the thoracic or chest area, and you would get problems going around the ribs from that area, or you could get problems in the legs if it were a major disc protrusion or a major spur or tumor. So, yes, it's localized based on the arms and the legs.
Okay. Now, would it be to one side or the other, like your left side, or would there be a – could you tell me like that? Would that would be – or would it affect both sides?
Yes, sir. For example, if you have a herniated disc or a crack in the disc with some of the soft center disc material coming out, classically that would either go to the right side or the left side. Sometimes it could go to both, but usually it causes pain and weakness and numbness only on one side. The same would be true for an arthritic spur, whereas you could get them on both sides. It's classic to have symptoms on one side.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're all welcome.
Right, thank you. And next we have someone locally on line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning.
I had a question about whether or not you've seen any increase on people complaining of back and arm problems because of use of computers and clicking on mouses and things that have to do with that type of usage, you know, over time.
Yes, indeed. In fact, I'm one of those people that has it. I have a minor narrowing of my disc, of a disc in my neck at C5, C6 that's been proven by X-ray. And during surgery, when I'm looking down in someone's back, if I'm doing surgery for more than 2 or 3 hours without a break, my neck stiffens up and I get a little bit of pain that goes into my shoulder and my shoulder blade.
Mm-hmm.
If I do my exercises every day for 2 weeks, the pain goes completely away. And like most people, I get lazy and forget to do my exercises after a while and it comes back. It's the same thing with sitting over a keyboard, particularly if your head is in a forward bent position.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the common aggravating situations.
Looking down at the keyboard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, that answers that
particularly
question.
The way I type, because I have to look at the keys.
So the thing is try to remember if you're engaged in that activity in a job that you need to stop, take a break, probably move around and not stress yourself out, right?
Excellent. Certain chairs can help you out. The height of your keyboard can make a difference. And if you can raise your monitor up so that you're not looking down at your monitor, but it's at eye level, that would also help.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
You're welcome.
I think it's an excellent point. I know just from experience, I'm sure going around here, if we went around here, or probably we went around in any office, and we looked at people's workstations who had computers and looked at the way that they were set up, I'd say chances are we would find an awful lot that are not set up in the way that they're supposed to be, that is in terms of things like how high is the keyboard, how high is your chair, where is the monitor set, to try to minimize those kinds of problems. And so probably people could think about that and might indeed go some way to making them a lot more comfortable when they do that work.
I'd agree with that. Now, when you're 18 years old and you have a job like that, it's not a problem. But as you get older, it's a little more difficult to sit in one position all the time, particularly if it's not the best position.
Yeah. Other callers? Let's see. We have someone else locally here, line number two. They are next. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Morning.
Good morning. Your last caller talked about neck problems, and it sounds a lot like what I'm having too, your own problem. I was wondering if that condition is reversible, because I've also been doing exercises and chiropractors and yoga and deep muscle massage, and nothing seems to be working. And I was wondering if it's something that is just a permanent chronic situation, or is there something that I can do to reverse it? Or I don't know if you can comment on that at all.
Oh, I'd love to comment. Mm-hmm. There are a number of things you can do. First of all, the most likely diagnosis is a disc is aging before its time. In your case, since you sound like a young lady, I would call it premature degenerative disc disease. Mm-hmm. That bothers a person on and off for a number of months and years, and then generally from any one disc aging before its time goes away. So this is likely to hang on for a while, but it's likely to eventually get better with time no matter what you do.
Okay, so in the meantime, what's the best way to cope with this then?
Heat, ice, mm-hmm. massage, mm-hmm. physical therapy modalities, visiting an osteopath or chiropractor,
okay.
pain pills, muscle relaxants, mm-hmm. nerve pills, collar or traction can help in the short run.
Okay.
In the long run, you could be helped by obtaining a Care of the Neck booklet and gleaning from that the helpful hints. Mm-hmm. Many of us, such as myself, take our necks for granted, and only later in life do we find we've been doing some things wrong all along that may have had some negative effects. Mm-hmm. If you can keep your range of motion normal, that will also help. If you can strengthen the neck muscles, and maybe your muscles have to be stronger than the average person's in order to make up for the weakness in the discs, so the muscles absorb more of the load.
Okay.
Occasionally, if a person's incapacitated and can't function, surgery in the form of a spinal fusion can be done.
Okay.
But that has to be an absolute last resort.
Okay, I see. So a little bit of everything then. Of what I've already been doing, it sounds like.
If you've not visited your primary care doctor about it, that would be wise.
Okay.
If you and your primary care doctor are having trouble managing, you could visit with a rehabilitation medicine doctor. That's a physical therapy MD who specializes in the non-operative treatment of these kind of problems.
Okay. All right, thank you for your help.
All right,
you're welcome.
Thank you for the call. We are now about the midpoint of the Sparta Focus 580. We're talking about the back and care of the back, and I guess we include the neck in that. Everything from your skull down to your pelvis, I guess, is your territory, right?
I think so.
Okay. Our guest is Dr. James Harms. He's an orthopedic surgeon at Carle Clinic. And questions are welcome. I know he will do his best to answer yours. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Geneva next, line number four. Hello.
Yeah, a little earlier you you mentioned that you did exercises for your neck. Were those specialized exercises or are they generalized back exercises? Maybe you can describe some generalized back exercises, and I'll just hang up and listen, okay?
Sure.
Okay, sure.
For the neck, I recommend three types of exercises. I think that both the lower back and the neck are benefited by general cardiovascular fitness exercises. So I recommend that people walk 2 to 3 miles a day, at least 5 days a week. You get full credit for that. If you walk 6 days, you get an A. If you walk 7 days, you get an A+. If you want to go bicycle riding, swimming, Nordic track, whatever you and your body can agree on is fine. The next exercise that I think helps the most is a range of motion exercise, and there are many different forms of those. The one that I like best, because I can be real lazy about it, is to lie in bed on your stomach. Not good to do that for your lower back for a long period of time, but for a few minutes it's okay. And I turn my head to the side and let gravity turn my head a little bit more and more and more. And just the weight of my body turns it. I generally do about 30 seconds turning to the right and then 30 seconds turning to the left. And then I repeat that. I do that for a couple minutes every night before I go to bed. It's an easy time to remember doing the exercises. If my neck is bothering me, I also do a third type of exercise, which is called the isometric exercises for the neck. It involves taking your hand, left or right, your choice, and you put it on your forehead. You push your hand backwards and you push your head forwards. You hold it for the count of 10, and you don't do it to the point of pain. You just do it to the point of comfort or discomfort. I then go to the side of my head, just above my ear, and I put my palm there, and then I push sideways with my head, and I resist that force with the palm of my hand. And I do that to the count of 10. I then take both hands, and I intertwine my fingers, and I put them behind my head, again at about ear level, and I push backwards with my hand, with my head, and forward with my hands. After 10 seconds, I switch and I go to the opposite hand and the opposite side of the head just above the ear, and I push the other direction with my head and resist it with my hand. I do that for a couple minutes a day to strengthen the neck muscles. If you need specific instruction, though, I recommend visiting a physical therapist who can individualize your exercise program. A therapist can also help troubleshoot if you're having problems. But anything to improve your range of motion, turning right or left, anything that improves the neck muscle strength, and anything for cardiovascular fitness should help most neck problems.
Very good. We'll continue here. The next caller in line is in Camargo, and that is line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
About 5 years ago, I had back surgery, and I got a staph infection. Since then, the doctors have told me that I have scar tissue. I've had diathermy, hydrotherapy, exercises, the whole bit. But I still have a lot of pain. Is there anything you can do about scar tissue?
No. However, the good news is I'm not sure that scar tissue is causing your problem. I personally think that scar tissue is highly overrated as a cause of problems in the spine. For example, I have a big scar on my abdomen that I had from an abdominal procedure as a teenager, and that doesn't give me any problems whatsoever, even though I know there's a lot of scar there. I have scar on my knees, on my hands. I was an active young man and have the battle wounds to prove it. Scar generally does not cause a problem except under rare circumstances. If you were bad enough to have surgery, you probably had some degenerating discs and or some arthritis. It's more likely that the degenerative disc disease or the arthritis or a combination is causing your problem. So before giving up and saying that you had to live with it and to invoke scar tissue as the demon, I would say it would be wise for you to visit with a rehab medicine doctor and find out in more detail some of the things that could be tried. Nerve medications can be helpful in circumstances such as yours. I would want to know what your weight is. I think that certain other medications, such as anti-inflammatory medications, might help. And maybe you even have some residual pressure on your nerves after all this time. But I think I wouldn't be depressed that scar tissue is causing it because there's other causes. Many times in the past, and our literature supports this, we've tried to take out scar tissue and it hasn't helped people. We used to say it's because the scar tissue always grows back, but now we have some things that keep scar tissue from coming back and it hasn't improved any. So I'd look for an underlying problem.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Savoy next, line two. Hello.
I had a consultation with you about 3 years ago, and I had a problem in my leg, and I came with all the x-rays and the CAT scan and the MRI. Your diagnosis was there should be a spur on my spine in a certain spot that caused it all, but you couldn't find it. So I have two questions. One, are you doing any better at removing spurs you can't see? And if not, number two, it's now progressed to pain in the hip. Is there a chance that that spur might have progressed to where it could be seen?
Yes to all those questions. First of all, I'm not perfect, and I don't always see everything that's there. And I suggest that people get other opinions if I can't find what's wrong with them to their satisfaction. Also, our MRIs are better than they used to be. Even 3 years ago, the techniques have improved, and it's quite possible that something could be seen now that wasn't seen then. It may also be that you have a problem with the nerve itself, and visiting a neurologist might, under very sophisticated testing, point to an exact diagnosis. So I'd say it's time to check in with your medical doctor first and give someone such as a neurologist or myself another chance at diagnosing your problem. Early on, we can't always diagnose a person's problem, and it may have to evolve over a period of time before we can figure it out. Also, we do get smarter with time.
Thank you. I'll do just that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So it is possible that for example, a person could, there could be a bone spur, could be causing a problem, and that but that it could be small enough so that you might not be able to see it?
There are a number of possibilities. It could be the possibility you just mentioned, or it could be that maybe I didn't look hard enough. Another possibility is that it's not the bone spur causing it at all, but it's something entirely different. Mm. Also keep in mind that a scan only shows a certain percentage of the problems. For example, a CAT scan might show 90% of the spurs. An MRI might show 98% of the spurs. But there's still a couple percent that we might not pick up by the usual tests that we do. This gentleman, the recent caller, might be a candidate to go through a CAT scan myelogram, which is an older technology, but might show something where an MRI does not.
Okay. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with our guest, Dr. James Harms from Carl Clinic. He's an orthopedic surgeon, and we're talking this morning about the back. And if you have some sort of problem, you can call in and talk about it with us. That's us, with the doctor. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Here's someone locally, line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Good
yes.
morning.
Oh, yes. I wonder if you've heard of the God's Safe Remedy for it reverses many ailments, and it's a seaweed, and the name of it is spirulina.
Would you spell that for me, please?
Yes, sir. It's S-P-I-R-U-L-I-N-A.
I have not heard of that, and thank you for bringing it to my attention.
I have a toll-free number. You can get it's a complete food, and it's safe because it's grown on man-made ponds and supervised, so there's no pollution as in the ocean.
Well, I must say that I would rather read about it first before I place my order.
So, you could get this free in the mail, this and it has a sample of the seaweed. It's 1-800-949-7473.
Okay.
And it's 65% protein, so if a person is missing a meal, just that two of those tablets dissolve in the mouth twice a day, and it started out for extreme overweight.
Has it helped you?
It certainly has. My only problem is I'm trying to get a lesser milligram, which is 500 milligrams, and I've lost too much weight for my height, but I'm really energetic, and my age is 80.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for the tip.
Sure.
Let's go on here to someone else locally. This would be line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
Good morning. I have the back pain for the last 10 years, upper back pain. I have all the tests done, and they advised me surgery 5 years ago. I didn't want to have surgery. The pain radiated to both of my arms. And I happened to be in a place where I didn't have any bed or anything. I started lying, sleeping on floor. And in 6 months, I got improvement in my back pain. Still, I have a little bit of stiffness or the off and on pain, which goes away when I start sleeping on the floor. The problem I'm having is the numbness in my fingers of the right hand. Sometimes it is on the left hand. It comes and goes. One of my fingers on the middle finger is numb all the time. I went to the physician and told me I have carpal tunnel syndrome, plus I have osteoarthritis. My fingers in both hands are swollen, and sometimes I have shooting pains in the fingers, which is not constant. It starts, comes, and goes. What should I do?
I think you should see a neurologist if you've not already done so.
I have done that. I have gone to every kind of specialties for some other problems. I have physical problems.
I still think...
They advised me to have the surgery for carpal tunnel, but I don't know whether the surgery for carpal tunnel is going to help me or it is from the back pain.
I would agree with you. I think that it is quite common for people with back problems to recline or sleep on an extra firm surface, and that often helps with the trunk pain, either neck or low back.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily help with the extremity symptoms, though. Your situation is complicated because some of your symptoms could be coming from carpal tunnel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Some of your symptoms could be coming from osteoarthritis in the upper in the arm.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the symptoms could be coming from osteoarthritis in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Probably you've got some discs aging before their time in the neck as well that could be contributing.
Told me I have osteoarthritis.
And the two things in the neck with the discs aging before their time and the arthritis could be narrowing the space available for the nerves in the neck.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's going to take a good neurologist who's interested in your problem
uh-huh.
to help sort this out because it's quite complicated.
Uh-huh.
You could get an injection in your wrist, and if that helped you out, you'd know...
Already.
That a lot of the problem was coming from the wrist if it helped. The same goes for the neck. You could get an injection in the neck, and if that helped you out, it would tell you what percentage of the symptoms are coming from the neck.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you didn't have the best experience with a neurologist, I would give it another try.
Mm-hmm. The neurologist did all the testing, including for the pain from the back, arms, and everything. And they also told me it is a carpal tunnel. The numbness in the hand is due to carpal tunnel. But and after some time, the finger, which was numb for 6 months, went away, the middle finger in the right hand.
Carpal tunnel symptoms do tend to wax and wane, so that's not too surprising. And if you're getting better...
back again now.
Well...
numbness is back again now in the middle finger.
A physical therapist could help if you want to do non-operative therapy. Mm-hmm. Your primary care doctor could help. There are some good hand surgeons in this area, including at the institution where I work, that you could go and get an opinion.
Our clinic?
Yes, as to whether surgery would be appropriate or not. Mm-hmm. But I think you need some more information before making a decision.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Any medicine for numbness?
B vitamins sometimes help.
Mm-hmm.
B as in boy vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to
You're welcome.
Oaklawn is another caller here, line number four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Doctor, I'm 65 years old, and I was diagnosed through an MRI by an orthopedic surgeon to have a degenerative disc condition, L4 and 5. I now do daily exercises prescribed by a physical therapist. And my question is there, and you may possibly have answer this question partially through the other call, is there a nutritional regimen for degenerative disc situation?
There's anecdotal evidence, for example, that supplied by our previous caller, that supplements can help. There is nothing in our literature to suggest that supplements do help. There's no scientific proof. I think that diet may help in as much as it keeps your weight down, but specific supplements, I can't quote you any articles or evidence. I think you're doing exactly the right thing by a regular exercise program, and I'll bet it's paying off.
Yes, it is. Yes, indeed it is.
You can go to the health food store, and you can find a dozen things that the anecdotal evidence will support that will help you out, but not in the medical literature.
Could you give me an example?
Of something that might help?
Yes, sir.
Yes. For example, the glucosamine is said to help all joints. The chondroitin sulfate is said to help all joints, including those in the back, although the evidence I've seen says that it only helps very few. But those are two that you could try.
How about MSM?
That's been used for various muscle and joint complaints. Again, I don't know the scientific evidence. That one I can't tell you that I recall the specific evidence, but I think I would know if it did help.
All right, doctor. Thank you very much. For
All right. Thanks.
Sorry.
We've got one more here, and they're locally here, line number two. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
Actually, I don't usually have back pain, even though I have lordosis and kyphosis. But I was working in the yard, and I do a lot of that weeding and stuff. And I bent over, and even though I do this every day, this one day, I got this terrible back pain. And I don't know what I did wrong, and it went away in about 3 or 4 days, but I just wondered what happened.
Unfortunately, there are so many things that could happen that I can't pin it down.
Oh.
I can tell you that there's a high probability that too much of the force was absorbed in one area of your body, and you may have gotten a crack in the disc or a tear in the covering of the disc called the annulus.
Oh.
That frequently causes back pain that goes away within a few days or a few weeks.
Huh.
It can be mild, it can be severe, it can be in between.
Uh-huh.
If you told me you bent over and felt something crunch a little bit in your back and you couldn't get out of bed for 3 days and you were pretty miserable for a couple weeks after that, I would think that you might have had a minor fracture from osteoporosis.
Oh,
but I'll bet that you got a little tear because you bent and twisted at the same time in one of your discs, and your body has healed that, but it took a while.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Right, thanks. Well, you know, we've talked about the fact that that over time the disc material does, there is some natural deterioration. Some people have it worse than others. What sort of prospects are there for coming up with either something, a really good replacement, so that, for example, if somebody had a bad disc, you could just take it out and put something in, either some sort of artificial material or something that was, in a sense, like the same stuff that was there before.
I'm going to be going to the North American Spine Society meeting later this year, and I've already seen a list of the papers that are going to be presented. There's gene therapy that's being done with taking adenoviruses and putting genes in them, using them as carriers, and putting them in the discs to try to get the discs to regenerate. People are using various hormones to try to help the discs regenerate. In animals, you can take disc cells out, grow a new disc, and put the new disc back in to the animal. That's not being done in humans at the present time. And one can put in an artificial disc, and there are probably 10 centers in the United States that are doing disc replacements in an experimental fashion. It is not approved by the FDA. It's not covered by anybody's insurance that I know of, but that's being done in about 10 centers.
I think we're just about at the point here we're going to have to stop. Maybe I can try to squeeze one person in here real quick on line one. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
I've been a runner for several years, and a few years ago, I guess I injured my lower back, and I was simply asked to rest my lower back, and I got better very quickly. I have since started stretching my lower back very carefully, and that has helped. And so I run about 15 to 20 miles every week. But all the same, I still feel soreness in my lower back, no real pain, just a soreness. And I was curious if I could just do something about that.
We can give you about 30 seconds, I'm afraid, to...
Yes, I applaud you for getting back to running. I think regular exercise is the single most important thing you can do to help, and your heart's in the right place, your intentions are in the right place. You can make sure that you have extra padding in your shoes, make sure if your arches aren't good that you have extra arch supports, and if you can run on a soft surface versus a hard surface. That is, if you have access to a high school track, you're better off than running on concrete. I think you're doing exactly the right thing by stretching ahead of time, and anything you can do to keep the abdominal muscles in good shape would also be of benefit.
And there we must stop because we're here at the end of the time. We want to say to our guest, Dr. James Harms from Carl Clinic, thanks very much.